So my talk tonight will be on the subject of forgiveness, which is not an easy subject, I guess, after being to the concentration camp. And we all have been witnessing an incredible amount of suffering which was inflicted upon people there. And it's so huge one. It's really difficult to imagine. And I could imagine that you might have felt overwhelmed at times. I feel from time to time always overwhelmed by it. And in times, maybe as a reaction, but also not as a reaction, I simply close down a little because it's so huge. And yet, even having witnessed this amount of suffering, it's only a tiny portion of the whole suffering this war caused in the world. I mean, it's so huge, so far. A few years ago, I went to Korea to be in the monasteries, and I came across cemeteries with Second World War victims, and it was amazing to see even here the war has affected people so deeply. And the question can arise so easily, can this ever be healed? And I think if, then only after a long, long time. I mean, this needs to be clear. This is not something done soon or quick. It is so huge, it will take a lot of time, if ever. And when I open to the suffering which I imagine has happened at those days, I encounter many difficult feelings. Many difficult feelings arise in me. And you probably felt the same. It can be anger, it can be rage, it can be sadness, it can be helplessness. All sorts of very difficult feelings which come up. And they themselves are very painful and we know where they lead, but they are normal reactions of the mind. We have to understand that it is completely not natural to feel that way. And I, for myself, I find it important to acknowledge them just as much as I acknowledge the suffering. I acknowledge these feelings, which when I reflect upon it, were of course the same which caused the infliction of the pain. So I acknowledge that these forces are also within me. The arising of those feelings in themselves is not the problem. It's a problem when I then act upon those feelings of anger, of rage, of helplessness even. If I listen to them, if I believe them as the only truth, if I hold on to them as my identity, as the truth, then this energy will stay in my heart and it will slowly poison my heart. And out of that, then I want to do revenge. I want to hit back. I want to punish someone. I divide the world in friends and enemies. And this is a split in my heart. This creates, maybe not immediately, but it's one of the causes which lead to further suffering. And we can see this in the world if we pay close attention. And it's the same thing here. It leads in the end to new war. It leads to new suffering. And we are just feeding the endless cycle of suffering. Instead of trying to stop what happened, trying to build the causes which will really lead that something like this can never happen again, we create the very same causes. And we got to understand that. We got to understand this brings not more. If you hold on to them, not the experience, if you hold on to these feelings, then these don't bring more happiness. They don't bring peace. They bring suffering. The Buddha said once, hatred can never cease through hatred. Only through love can hatred cease. This is a very deep wordings of the Buddha. At the same time, it takes a tremendous amount of courage to believe that. It's not my natural response. If someone hits me, to love them. Just notice it when you're in your daily life and someone just in a little way is unkind to you. Are you kind back naturally, or does it take some effort? Does it take some consideration? Often it does. But it is very clear, we can see it in our daily lives. If we can manage that often, very often, it can immediately lead to that the anger is ceasing. Also the other person, definitely in ourselves. Such love, when we practice it, leads to forgiveness, or is forgiveness is a side of that love. And if we look deeply, we can understand that the only true release from suffering, that this cycle of new suffering is going to stop, is by bringing in the power of forgiveness. If you understand this deeply, it the anger in myself is going to rest, and the anger in the world is going to go at rest. So for practicing forgiveness, bringing in forgiveness, cultivating forgiveness, is an act of love for ourselves as much as for the world. And we need to understand it, because we need a motivation for developing that. Because especially in the face of such a magnitude of suffering, one might question, one might doubt that forgiveness is really appropriate here. If we forgive this, this is impossible, it might say in us. We might fear that it somehow makes that what happened less. It somehow, it might be forgotten, or it was not as bad. But forgiveness is really something entirely different than forgetfulness. There's a quote from C.R. Strahan. I can't tell you more about him, except that I really like his quote. Forgiveness has nothing to do with absolving a criminal of his crime. It has everything to do with relieving oneself of the burden of being a victim. Letting go of the pain and transforming oneself from victim to survivor. So it empowers oneself. Forgiveness is a letting go of anger, really, that uplifts the person who forgives, who is forgiving. So also that we often think, oh, forgiving, it helps the other person. It's for the other person. They don't have to feel that guilty anymore. But actually, it's not true. It's for myself. It's for us. It uplifts me. It brings back the power to the victim. It empowers them again, restores his or her spirit, and enables them to find joy and love in their lives again. This needs courage, and this needs a lot of strength. And as we are exploring these days, we can see that who is a victim can have many faces. to be a victim has many faces. There are those who are have been inflicted pain upon, who were imprisoned. They are obviously the victims. But there are also the descendants, the children of the victims. They are also victims. But they are also the children of the perpetrators. They are also victims of those deeds. There are all those people who have experienced the war in so many ways. There's been pain, suffering. They're also victims. And in a way, if we look deeply, maybe perhaps we even can see that the perpetrators themselves may be victims. Victims by having been taught to hate, having been manipulated to see others as inferior, to hate and kill other beings. And we can see it now in so many countries. How people are told by the government, through media, through lies, those are your enemy. You have to really harm them. They want you harm. It's not even true. Sorry, I didn't notice you went there yet. Sorry. I just one thing. You probably with the Iraq War. They've been told, the Americans have been told, they have mass destructive weapons. And that's why people believed and they were for the war. And later it came out, what some people already guessed, it came out it wasn't true. And they knew it wasn't true. They were lying. And this is just a small example I just come up with, but there's so many times people get so manipulated. And it's not to excuse everything, but I was just today in this, when I was sitting at the cafe having a coffee, and I was, they had some books there to read, and there's obviously a lot of research done. And I read a few things about the early years of Nazi time, and how they were, through the kind of propaganda, showing movies, telling stories about the Jews and other people, and creating a whole lie, manipulating the people. And everyone, I read a few things, normal people, workers from the street, whoever, who said, no, they're doing bad things out there. They were imprisoned immediately. So it was amazing. Just two pages to read and see how people are drawn, pushed and manipulated into being a perpetrator. Not to say they don't have any responsibility, okay? Not to say, hey, people, you cannot just blame it all on conditions. Open your eyes and look. You cannot take it all out, otherwise, you know. But also to see there's maybe more than that. And maybe you know it for yourself. Times in our lives when we were believing, holding on to beliefs, and later found out actually they were built on lies other people told us about. So seeing that this broadening the view who is the victim already helps us a little bit to move in the direction of forgiveness. When I was preparing this talk, especially in English, I went onto the internet and I thought I need to have some English quotations. And what I first thought, oh, it would be hard to find anything. you know. So it was my first kind of idea, and then I put it into, you know, my keyword, and then actually I have hundreds of quotes, wonderful quotes about forgiveness. And it really rejoiced me, because I felt, oh, obviously there are even more people who know about this wonderful quality of forgiveness. So if you like, if you get inspired, just look it up. It's so inspiring. So, and most number of them I don't know. So there's Corrie ten Boom. He said about the power of forgiveness. Forgiveness is the key that unlocks the door of resentment and the handcuffs of hatred. It is a power that breaks the chains of bitterness and the shackles of selfishness. Gordon B. Hinckley, the willingness to forgive is a sign of spiritual and emotional maturity. It is one of the great virtues to which we all should aspire. Imagine a world filled with individuals willing both to apologize and to accept an apology. Is there any problem that could not be solved among people who possessed the humility and largeness of spirit and soul to do either, or both, when needed? And one famous Martin Luther King Jr. We must develop and maintain the capacity to forgive. He who is devoid of the power to forgive is devoid of the power to love. There is some good in the worst of us and some evil in the best of us. When we discover this, we are less prone to hate our enemies. And at the same time, it sounds really, you know, uplifting and wonderful, and everything in myself says yes. By the same time, if you look into our own lives, you might see it's actually extremely difficult. So Sue Monk Kidd says, people in general would rather die than forgive. It's that hard. If God said in plain language, I'm giving you a choice, forgive or die, a lot of people would go ahead and order the coffin. If God said in plain language, if I'm giving you a choice, forgive or die, a lot of people would go ahead and order the coffin. And, you know, look at the world, look at our own lives, it's true. So we have to ask ourselves, why is it so difficult? What stands in the way? And we are here on the path of understanding. We need the understanding in order to overcome the obstacles, really. We cannot just order ourselves to forgive, it's not possible, but we can understand what's in the way. By understanding what's in the way, we can find a way to overcome it. So it's so helpful to be honest with ourselves and really see where we don't forgive, where we can't do it, and then look, what's there, what's coming up. As I said, when we are encountered with pain, when someone is inflicting pain on us, it's not the first idea that comes into our mind, oh, I want to forgive that person. The first response is anger, and if we're not careful, we get stuck in that anger. We trust anger. We can have a look at our lives. How often we truly trust anger more than love. We feel in a moment of anger, And I explored anger a lot because I know that reaction in myself. I can go quite easily into anger. Recently I just discovered the greed as well, but anger was on the top for quite some number of years. And in the form of anger, I feel immediately a bit stronger. Someone inflicts pain and I get angry, I feel strength. And this strength also gives me a feeling of protection. I can care for myself. Yeah? So, of course, I don't want to drop that. Yeah, I don't want to give that up easily. So that's one thing that really is in the way. But then, if I keep and reacting with anger in small situations and they pass by, I'm more likely to act out the anger, and anger comes more easily up, and act even more easily anger upon anger. And I discovered that that mechanism in driving the car. Driving the car in Germany after coming back after 10 years of practice abroad, and then another 5 years not having a car. I was out of driving cars for a long time, and then I come back to the road here, you know. And I was so amazed. I found people were so aggressive driving the car here. You know, always pulling out just in front of me, you know, and beeping the horn and whatever. And I was acting, I was shocked, and I was afraid, and I was frightened, and I was anger would come up, and I would kind of be yelling in my car, and you know, sometimes do a similar thing to them, and just you know, oh, I don't let him in, you know. After a while, I thought, and I was watching myself, you know, I wasn't unmindfully, I was just watching myself, oh, what's going on here? And I could see, every time I was getting even quicker angry. And every time I did it, I felt awful while feeling this anger. It felt strong, but I also felt awful. Especially by getting out of the car and going to give a talk, a Dharma talk, I felt really like, oh, it's something which is not quite in line here. And I was losing having fun driving the car. So at some point I thought, this is not... I was just testing this. I had some experience before, I still was testing again. But for letting out anger in a safe space most of the time, whether that would lead to the end of anger. And the only thing I discovered is my anger was getting quicker and bigger. I decided, okay, try the other way. I don't follow the anger. Anger comes up, okay, anger, I'm aware of the anger. I don't follow it, I don't shout, at least I try, I don't pull in, but rather, you know, oh, someone wants to come into the road, okay, maybe I just let him in, if I can. And it's amazing thing is because it works also the reverse. Now, I'm not getting that quickly angry anymore, not as often. I have much more fun when I'm driving the car. I'm getting off much more relaxed. So it's amazing. We can see the workings in our daily lives. It's so important to see that. So we have to see what anger does to us. It fills me with tension. It fills me with anxiety, because often when I felt like, oh, I was really angry to that person, you know, hopefully I don't meet that person at the next petrol station, you know. So, because when I get out of the car, as small as I am, and he gets out of the car, as big as he is, I might have not such a good chance, you know. So it's always this little bit, and not really feeling proud about myself, not feeling so good. And so to see that gives me a strong motivation to really work on the end of anger. I mean, yeah, the big things, but also the small things. I also read some account of relatives with whose parents or children or partners had been murdered. And this was about Americans, US Americans, and they still have the death penalty. And so there were some really longing for revenge, and they wouldn't stop till shouting for, you know, this person should be killed, should be, you know, put to death, till this was done. And there were others who actually didn't do that. They decided, no, this is not going to bring my child back, this is not going to do anything to me. And they simply weren't fueling the hatred, they were moving into a direction of forgiveness. And the interesting thing was that once we were hanging on to the hatred, their hatred did not cease when the perpetrators were killed. Whereby the others who moved into forgiving could start a new life. Nelson Mandela, I think you all know also him, and he also has experienced a lot of suffering himself, but also of many of his friends, relatives, and the black people in his country, a tremendous suffering. He said, resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemy. Yeah? This is. And another one, she was 27 years, I think, in prison. As I walked out the door toward the gate that would lead to any freedom, to my freedom, I knew if I didn't leave my bitterness and hatred behind, I'd still be in prison. That's greatness to do, to really do that. So there is really this strong things in the direction of forgiveness and how much it could help us, and yet we cannot force us to forgive. And that often we also know we have been sometimes in small age be forced by parents, oh come on, it's not so bad, forgive, and we couldn't do it and we would feel guilty for doing that. Force, we cannot enforce the heart to open, we cannot force forgiveness. If we force it, then if we look into that, we just use another form of aggression within ourselves or onto someone else. So, and it's very likely that no forgiveness is going to happen. Instead, we have a feeling of even more guilt, because we can't forgive, or we simply suppress the pain, we suppress the anger, which doesn't lead to happiness, which doesn't lead to the end of suffering. It pulls us down. This is the forgiveness which pulls us down. The true forgiveness, which is a deep letting go, is freeing the heart and is rejoicing for us. So it needs to be very clear in this, and then develop a strong motivation, and especially as the process that leads to forgiveness is not an easy one. It can be quite painful and difficult because it always goes through the suffering. We have to acknowledge the suffering. We have to acknowledge the painful feelings that arise out of that. And only then can we move into forgiveness. So, standing in the way, but also being a first step, is to feel the feelings. Feeling of anger, which is a natural response. To see it and yet not get identified by it. The interesting thing is, When we are hurt, people expect us to be angry. Yeah? Why are you not angry? Ah, you're forgiving. Yeah, how can you forgive this? We are questioned. People feel much safer if we're angry somehow. It's very strange. Again, I always want to break it down to our everyday experience, because somehow this is where we can practice, because it might be not as huge as the one we encounter today. And also, it's important to look at these small events, because they can equally poison our lives. And they prepare us also for bigger events to forgive. The mechanisms are the same. So, if you just think about you've got a conflict with your friend, or someone is driving too quick behind you and you feel threatened, or there's some injustice you have to endure in your job, you know, someone else gets the better salary whereby you're doing the real work, or someone is stealing something you got, something of yours, your car or your computer or whatever, what is the initial response? It is frustration, it is anger, it's annoyance. Can I allow it? Can I feel it? Can I feel the wish, oh, I hope this person gets caught. If they're driving too quick, I hope they get a ticket. If they were stealing the car, I hope they get caught and imprisoned. Maximum sentence. For sure, at least 20 years, or whatever. Yeah. We feel like there's an urge in that direction. Instead of focusing on that and staying on the story, which helps us so tremendously and we can learn this practice, is turning towards the feelings themselves and drop the story. That's the key. Really the key, that these feelings which naturally arise don't get stuck in us. We get stuck in the story. We identify with the story. The feeling will come. We have to allow it. But it will also leave us if we focus on that. So, really be careful with getting stuck in anger, resentment, and all these kind of emotions coming out of that realm. Then there's the area of fear. If we encounter pain, injustice, we experience also fear. We're afraid to be hurt, and that's natural. We're so vulnerable. We're afraid someone steals our things. That's completely natural. This fear can also lock us. It's extraordinary in that painful event, and we create fences around us which are never high enough that they can't be conquered. That's the one thing, and it also cuts us off from the world. We shouldn't be careless. We lock the door at night. I mean, we don't leave it wide open. We're in Berlin. But you know, I mean, no lock will ever completely keep anyone out. You know, if they really want to get in, they get in. At some point we have to let go and use human senses. The other kind of fear is that the pain will be forgotten if we forgive. This is all so often a mistake. We feel almost like if I hold on to my pain and if I hold on to what has happened, then it will not be forgotten. If I let go, oh, she can let go. Oh, it can't be the bad. So the fear, it is seen as not as big as it has been, or that someone simply forgets about it. And there we have to understand to forgive for ourselves. It brings us back to life. Another one is pride. Another one is pride. The blaming others gives us some strength. We are the better ones now. And who doesn't want to be the good one, the better one? You know, it gives us a strong sense of self, and that feels good. And it's tricky, you know. It's not self-confidence, it's something else. There's nothing against self-confidence. This is, I feel better as you. This is arrogance, this is pride. This is, arrogance might be the word. So, and if we're in this cycle of pride, then we easily get blind for our own faults. We think we are the good ones. We don't look at our actions and anything that doesn't fit into our idea who we are, we simply ignore. Criticism, we simply ignore. It can't be. I'm the good one. And then we're not clear in our actions, and we probably at some point we justify anything out of that. We easily put down others. If we are the good ones, there must be someone else who is the bad one. And that never feels good. It's always a seed for conflict, for new pain. And we are really fueling the circles of violence. And if we see that, can we really be proud of that? So, yeah. We have to look deeply here. Behind all of this are the workings in the end of ignorance, of that force in the mind the Buddha spoke of by not seeing clearly how things are. Seeing things in a different light as they are, out of which those feelings and those clinging onto those feelings comes. What are we not seeing clearly? We're not seeing clearly the cause and effect, the dependent arising. Any pride we feel will vanish as soon as we see that whatever arises as an intention, as an action, as a thought, as it's out of a complete net of conditions. Any action, any evil action grows out of conditions. Any good action comes out of conditions. There are numerous conditions leading up to something, and on one hand, I'm not responsible for all conditions, but I'm also having a part in that, because I'm also conditions come towards me, conditions are arising in me, and then there comes a moment where I could at least decide what to do. I could decide, do I act on it or do I not act on it? Of course, if the mind is not developed, it doesn't see it, it doesn't understand it, and it doesn't have the capacity to do it. So you see, even that is a matter of cause and conditions. And that's, in a sense, why the Dharma is so valuable. because it brings us that opportunity to actually see it clearly, see the point where we have a choice and actually have the capacity to choose. We also need the mental capacity to choose. I don't know whether you had it in your practice, especially the ones who are a bit longer on the road. You know, at first you're kind of ignorant, doing along, and then you do your first retreat, and that's bad news, normally. You begin to see how you act, you begin to see what's in you, you get clear. And you, after a little while, it doesn't take that long, you notice, oh, I could have a choice. I could allow the pain, or I could react against the pain. But then for a long time, you feel like, yes, I know I could have a choice, but I actually don't have a choice. I can't choose. I don't have the strength to be with that. I don't have the patience to be with that. The reaction is so much quicker than my mindfulness. Yeah, you're just like, I wish I could do otherwise, but I have already done it. And that sometimes takes longer than I think, than I want, you know, that period. Till you have the mental resources to say, no, I'm not acting on this. No. It takes an inner steadfastness, steadiness of mind. It takes a strength in my mindfulness, in my inner capacity to hold something which is very strong and powerful. And we build this up for practice. I'm much slower giving this talk in English. It's very funny. Sorry. So there's these conditionings. So quite a number of conditions come out of my environment, come out of a numerous network of situations and beings around me, as much as out of myself. So I have a power, and the more I practice, the more I'm empowered in my life to shape my life. And that's the good news about this practice. And also, I'm living always in relationship. I don't mean the near close relationship of a partner, I mean the relationship I'm encountering by just being alive. I'm always in relationship with someone, or even with the room, with the air. I'm always relating. And there are other people who do other things, and they create conditions. And I'm seen as part of a group. I mean, I'm an individual, but also I'm part of a group. At the moment, I'm a part of a meditation group here. I'm part of a group in my house. I live with three other people. I'm part of a group in terms of being German. So in all different aspects, I'm part of something. I'm part of the human race. Yeah, you cannot deny that. So animals would say, oh, that's a human. They wouldn't say, oh, that's Renate. Say, oh, person on two legs. Is that something I can eat or not? You know? It's so in that sense, or the animals in the woods are afraid of me because I've got two legs, you know? I'm not going to do harm them, but they run away from me. So I'm always also a little bit connected with the deeds of my group. This is collective karma. And other people outside of my group will see me as part of this group. They won't differentiate. They can't do it. They don't know me enough. So they will, out of their kind of glasses that they have, colored glasses, who I am, what kind is this group, they will treat me like this. So there we have that whole thing about the nations. Seeing, oh, this is an Arab, or this is a Jew, this is a German, they must be like this, they must be like that. I was challenged, I mean, I'm challenged by you from Israel a lot, but you're much closer to what I thought, you know, Europeans. But I met last year on a retreat, a Palestinian in Germany. I mean, so I didn't really wasn't expecting someone like this on the course, and I was noticing, oh, he was looking Arab. My co-teacher was thinking, oh, he's Indian because he was so nice to us women teachers. So I could see our kind of different perceptions already working. So we didn't know. But at the end of the course, of course, I was curious. I asked him, where are you coming from? And I expected something Arab, but he told me, I'm Palestinian. And I thought, what? You are Palestinian? I wasn't saying this, but I could feel my whole inner sense, because he was so, everything not what I thought a Palestinian is like. I mean, this, just by seeing that, I could see again what I said before. My mind gets manipulated all the time by media, all the time. What am I seeing? Palestinians are bombings. This is, even I don't believe it completely, I really don't, but it still shapes, it creates an image. And unless I meet someone from that group, it's not going to be challenged. So the only thing we can do, because this is happening in the background anyway, we can hold those images lightly. And when we encounter someone and we notice, oh, I have an image, okay, before I act upon that, I see, who are they? Let's see. And it's completely different. Okay, that was a sidetrack, I'm sorry. But it's so important. So in Buddhism we speak of this collective karma in that sense, and it's meant in that sense. It doesn't mean that because I'm part of a specific group, I'm guilty. I'm personally guilty for what they did. I'm not. That's something else. But I might have guilt arising in my consciousness because I'm belonging to that group. Yeah, I was saying that somehow. I might have, just yesterday, today, I realized guilt coming up for me is part of my conditioning being German. And that's fine. I accepted that. Simply accepted that. It comes up. Okay. I don't have to buy into it and think I am guilty. That's something else. I know I'm not guilty. I haven't done anything. But that the feeling of guilt arising, as painful as it is, if I don't make a problem out of it, it arises, is there, and vanishes. It doesn't have to stand in the way. I don't have to convince someone else to please take the guilt away from me, you know. You're not allowed to tell your stories because then I feel guilty, you know, this kind of thing. No. You tell your stories, I feel guilt. Oh, so what? I know I'm not guilty, you know, and I can hear the story, I can hear the pain. Immediately, soon as I don't take it personal, I can hear it, I can be open to that. I can be open to my pain that's arising, but I don't have to make an identity around it. Stephen, This is one of the biggest influences, is our identification. Forgiving is a form of letting go. Identifying is the opposite of letting go. We identify with our past, this is my past. We identify with our bodies, this is my body. We identify with our memories, with our roles, and we fix ourselves around it. We are this, we are that. This cannot be changed, this is it. And in this fixation, we see as our also independent, really independent selves. We're seeing someone who has hurt me, and we only see him in this light, and he will always hurt me. I see me as a victim and identify, and I will always stay a victim. I will believe in a fixed identity, a fixed self. It's true, and we cannot deny it, that our experiences, our conditions shape us. I mean, I have a specific history, and it's shaped how I think, how I feel, what comes up in my consciousness if I encounter certain situations. And each one of you has a different one, and it's unique. And that uniqueness is also brings the beauty to us, individual. In that sense, we develop a personality and have a personality. I can see definitely personalities in you. And you did this for different ones, you know, not just in shape, but also in personality. Each one of us has that. And yet, we can fix ourselves around it and say, oh, this is it. Especially take single ones out and ignore others and say, this is it. I'm this shy person. I was incredibly shy when I was young. I'm shy. Full stop. Yeah, I was having a heart race just going to the phone. Really, it's amazing. And yet we are more than that. We are more than that identity. We are more than that story. We are much more than that. We have inwardly a tremendous potential for change, for love. There's a story of Angulimala out of the Buddha's time. He was a murderer. He was a ruthless murderer without any need to kill anyone. And he was also a sadist. He cut off a finger of every person he killed and put them together into a necklace and was wearing this necklace around his neck. I mean, just imagine, you're sitting here with 999 fingers around your neck, or someone was sitting like this, you know, it's pretty sadist, huh? Gets close to what we've just been to. And yet the Buddha could see his potential for awakening. So he went, and by his power and his tremendous teachings, Angulimala understood deeply the truth and changed radically. And yet he could see, and it was for him terrible to see the tremendous suffering he had caused on people. And people did remember him as Angulimala, the person who has killed my relatives, and they were throwing stones at him. So every day he came home, he was just beaten up and he was bleeding and all of that. They didn't kill him because he was under the Buddha, but still. And so there was this tremendous potential the Buddha could see for change. He had the potential to change. And we also, we could be different. Our perpetrators could be different. They could change. Can we see that possibility? Can we see if we would have the conditions they had, maybe I would be the same. I had that thought when I was in my 20s, and I was belonging to the left-wing people, you know, so in my student times. And at night, you know, they always were a little bit, and still are, in fight with the ones who were more on the right side. Well, the thinking is more right-wing thinking. And so they were at night going along and beating the others up. And I thought, oh, there was no reason for it except that they were right. Right-winged. And at some a point I was thinking, oh, beating is just beating. And I don't know why they have, why I'm on this side, thinking in the left way. You know, my parents didn't bring this up in me. and why these people were ending up thinking in the right way, conservative way, brown way, you could say. So I was just wondering, you know, maybe there were more than just being right and brown and bad, but maybe it was conditions. There were conditions leading to that, and that somehow took away that kind of justification, I can just beat them up. It took away the kind of closeness I felt, and rather wanted to go and get into conversation. What's going on here? How did it come? Why do you think this way? Why do you feel this way? What is behind it? What is leading to that? Stephen told a little group this afternoon the story with the arm. he can do it much better than me. But just shortly, it's about a story where two friends meet in the market, and one gets hit by the stick, and so the person who gets hit by the stick, he gets angry at the stick, and his friend just is a bit kind of obviously more wise. He says, why are you shouting at the stick? There was the hand, wasn't it the hand who were holding the stick that was responsible for that? You know, because if without the hand, the stick couldn't beat you. So, oh yeah, of course. So you're shouting at the hand. And the friend again says, well, why are you shouting at the hand? I mean, the hand was led by the arm. You know, without the arm, the hand couldn't hit. So he's shouting at the arm. And so he goes on through the whole body. And then finally, why are you not shouting at the mind? Okay, so yeah, of course, there must be intention and blah, blah, blah. So shouting at the mind. So where does the intention come from? Don't you see all those conditions leading to that? You know, how this person was brought up, maybe had a bad day or, you know. Oh yes, of course, and I'm shouting at the conditions. And then finally, you have the whole world in it. You know, the conditions are so manifold. We don't see it when we act, when we are angry. We see only that we have to get, we have to experience it. So if you're angry, look where you're aiming at. You see a fixed personality. You see a fixed identity. There, ignorance is coming together. And that's why we can do that. If you see conditions, it dissolves. That we have to do in the practice. And this can bring us to true forgiveness. And this, if we really see that there is no fixed identity, there is a personality, but no fixed identity, which is independent of everything else, then we transcend our view of self, that view which imprisons us in greed and hatred. That's important. There is a person. There is a person who is suffering. It's not denying that, the uniqueness of a person. It's simply taking out the fixed identity, which isn't there. If we look deeply, it's not a concept. It's a truth we have to discover. It dissolves greed and anger. And that's the great blessing the Buddha brought upon us. He showed us that there's a truth. If we see it, it dissolves those forces which bring so much harm to us. So how can we, besides understanding, so if we want to develop forgiveness, we need to develop a motivation. We deeply have to understand the benefits we have from that. We have to see what's in the way deeply understand what's in the way of forgiveness. And then, of course, we have to go the road towards forgiveness. As I said, if it's not possible, it might be that we still are hurting. We cannot force it. We cannot force the forgiveness to happen. If we're hurting, there is a natural healing process going to start. If someone, if our body, if we hit our body, you know, then you might have a wound and you put something on it, a dressing, a band-aid. But just by putting it on, it doesn't heal. It needs time, right? So it's a little bit with our inner scars as well. Inner wounds, they need also a little bit of time. You can be soothing to them, you can hold it with awareness, but then also it simply needs time. So in that giving it time, we can let it be ruled by ignorance, or we can hold it in a wise way. Coralie Buchanan, not sure which nationality, says, "Forgiveness is not a one-off decision. It is a journey and a process that takes time, determination and persistence. Forgiveness is not forgetting. It is simply denying your pain the right to control your life." And the conditions that move us naturally in towards forgiveness is, on the one hand, the total acceptance of what has happened and the deep understanding. I think I said a lot already about that. So, important is there is a process where we can encourage it, where we bring it up, where we get in touch with it, where we feel it. And there's also a time where we have to let it rest. If the pain is too big and too overwhelming, then we take a break, and we are allowed to take a break. It's wise to take a break. Just, okay, go and have a cup of tea, go and look at the sky, go and meet a friend, and get yourself away from it. And yet, just getting away from it won't heal it too. So it's a going back and forth, meeting it and also dropping it again, meeting it and dropping it again. And you will sense when there's a kind of, one can do that, meeting it and feeling it, and one can meeting it and it helps dissolving the pain. And you will see it over time, where it goes. This is, you have to simply watch it carefully. When we experience pain, and also when we experience anger, what also is very important is to remember, or helpful, is compassion. And often one forgets in such a moment, we forget the compassion for ourselves. It's not the justification of anger, it's something different, because when we're angry, if you look deeply, we see that we are hurting. And any pain is soothed by compassion. So if you're angry, if I'm angry, I turn towards myself, not to say I'm right to be angry, but I try to find the pain beneath the anger. And then I embrace myself with the anger and the pain with compassion. Instead of shouting at myself and saying, "Oh, shouldn't be angry." No, I'm in pain. I'm in pain right now. The other one is also in pain, probably, but I also have to tend towards myself. If I can't have compassion for myself, how do I want to have it for someone else? It's not possible. It's simply not possible. Yet, it shouldn't stop here. Oh, only I get compassion. The other one, no. Yeah? But I need compassion as well. Be forgetting that sometimes. this compassion especially helps me to rebalance myself. I tell you a personal story, actually. It's just one of the strongest ones, but actually also feels like quite intimate. It happened with my father. I have a quite difficult relationship with my father. He's not an easy person, and he's very much he takes a lot of space. He's really difficult. And so I was at home, you know, it's not that long ago, so I was already teaching. That so often carries a little bit of a kind of who you should be and what you could do, you know. So I was with my parents and my father, stayed a few days, and he was getting at my nerves. And he has this, you know, pushing my buttons so long till I shout. Before, he simply ignores any boundaries, any limits. He walks over it. He just doesn't get it. And finally, I just like exploded. And then he realized what's going on. Okay, he stepped back. But it was so painful for me. And I was on the way teaching, okay? Not only 1 hour by bus. And I was so in distress. I was sitting in the bus and I just started crying. And then I felt like I was trying to do compassion and metta for my father. I felt like I have to, you know. And then I felt, no, there was no way I could do it. And then I was just realizing, no, the pain is inside myself. So I was turning the compassion to myself. I was just, okay, may I be free of my pain, and I forgive myself for having shouted, and really soothing this inner child in me, which was so in pain. And after a while, it was calming down, and from that place, I could suddenly see my father and see him only as a bundle of conditions. He can't get out of that. You know, I just see his conditioning, and he has been this way all his life. It's so strong. There's no understanding, there's no willingness to understand, all of that. You know, but instead of blaming, I could just see him as a bundle of conditions, and I could let go. It was so amazing. But I had to do I had to turn to myself and forgive myself and hold myself and drop the idea of I'm a teacher, I should all these wonderful things. I don't know about you, you probably can do that. Yeah, you can see, I got a little bit of shame, yeah, coming up. So, I can buy into it or I can let it go. Don't ask me right now. So we need to be aware of what is a natural, which is the process leading us, but we also need to know the direction, and we can invite the direction. We have to adjust our view. We have to adjust where we want to go. Not just only sitting mindful day in, day out, I personally think is not enough. We need also an idea where we want to go. I mean, the Buddha told eightfold path, not the onefold path. He just not just did teach mindfulness, he taught also right view, right intention. And we have to cultivate it, and we can cultivate that through those thoughts and also through certain reflections. And one reflection I'm going to do with you tomorrow is the reflection on forgiveness. But it has to have this framework to understand first, to understand where it comes from, that we act that we inflict pain on others. It comes out of those, not out of beings, out of forces which are in all of us. Greed, hatred, delusion, fear. Or is anyone amongst you who doesn't have that? We also probably know how often we are aware of them operating, how often we are not. I guess more often we are not aware, right? We just do it, we don't know. We are not aware. If we understand that, we're getting closer to forgiveness. And yet, we also in this forgiveness practice explicitly say, I only do it as much as I can in this moment. So take off the pressure. The forgiveness goes in the direction of myself, goes in the direction of, you know, we are not just victims, we are also in our lives, we hurt people in small ways. So we recognize also this, so we work with this in all directions, we forgive ourselves, we see that others harm us out of the same reasons, and we harm others out of the same reasons, and by that we truly can let go. I want to end with a saying, a quotation from Martin Luther King, again him. Forgiveness is not an occasional act, it is a constant attitude. And this attitude we can develop, and that moves us beyond our pain, our being victims, beyond ourselves, our fixed, limited self. That's it for a moment.